His glory, His divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Size Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Offering myself at Bhagwan's lotus feet, this is Karuna signing in live from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Good morning and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live, coming to you in real time from the Radio Sai studios in Prashanti Nilayam, my home and my heaven and the abode of highest peace. The time in the ashram right now, sadly, is 49 minutes past 9 a.m., which means we started 9 minutes late. That is 9:49 Indian Standard Time, and I apologize profusely for this delay. Today is Thursday, March the 9th, 2017, and it's a fine morning here in the ashram. The current temperature is 27 degrees Celsius. We have clear skies, crisp breeze, and zero air and noise pollution. Today, we are expecting daytime highs of 37 degrees Celsius later in the afternoon and overnight lows of 24. Serving the ashram and all its allied institutions right now are the Sevadal volunteers from the Indian state of Maharashtra. At Radio Sai, we salute our Sai sisters and brothers who come from all over India every single week to selflessly volunteer their services at the lotus feet of our Sadguru Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba. Dear listeners, doesn't it make you wonder what power there is in Baba's love that every week men and women and youth from various states come here using their own vacation time to serve in his mission, and each volunteer, whether you believe it or not, bears his or her own expenses, and they do so with such joy and gratitude. So naturally, one is left spellbound at the power of this divine land to draw so much of goodness and sacrifice from so many. As a proud daughter of lifelong Sevadal volunteers, I salute every Sevadal volunteer in this great nation of Bharat. Jai ho hamare sabhi Sevadal bhai behno ki. Dear sisters and brothers, today on Morning Glory, I have not one or two or three, but four special treats for you, and I promise you, you're going to love all four of them. Did you, for starters, know that during the old Mandir days, there was a different aarti that was sung? Let's begin the show by taking you down memory lane and enjoy the aarti from Patamandiram days. So it's now time for a way back playback Thursday moment. Have a listen, please.
Shri చేసి రూపదీపములని వెలిగించి స్వామికి పంచరక్షణని వేద్యములని చేసి పాలించే రోచి సాయినాథుని శ్రీవాసుని పరమేశ్వరుని సత్యరసాయిని పాలించే రోచి సాయినాథుని శ్రీవాసుని పరమేశ్వరుని సత్యరసాయిని పూజింతు మన సాయిని జయ సాయిని సర్వేశ్వరుని జగదీశ్వరుని భక్తవత్సలని పాదవిగతియని భజనలు చేసి భక్తి శ్రద్ధలతో మంగళములు చేసి వారములని వెళ్ళి మంగళములు పడి జయ హరతి
Sairam, dear listeners, you just heard the earlier year's aarti that used to be sung in the old mandir a long, long time ago. We are very grateful to our Radio Sai Studios in Sundaram and our team in Chennai for this wonderful gift. And thank you, Ashwin Suresh, for sharing this. In due course of time, we will bring you all the other juicy details related to this era and this aarti. Dear listeners, the Patha Mandiram days are long gone, and what is approaching us next month is the most poignant and emotionally charged day when we observe the passage of our beloved Bhagwan from the form to the formless on 24th of April. Around the world and across Bharat, millions of Sai devotees will be participating in spiritual exercises that resonate the values that our beloved Lord stood for. Numerous initiatives are being taken up as part of personal and group sadhana or spiritual discipline leading up to this historic day. Today, to get an overview of the Aradhana Day spiritual exercises being taken up by the SSIO, which is Satya Sai International Organization, we recently recorded a short conversation with Dr. Narendranath Reddy over the phone. Dr. Reddy spoke to us from California in the USA. Earlier on, in a letter to the Global Sai Community dated 1st of March 2017, Chairman of the Prashanti Council, Dr. Reddy said, and I quote him, "Satya Sai devotees all over the world observe 24th April as the day our loving Lord Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba left his physical form and continues to shower his love as our eternal companion. On this day each year, devotees honor his life and legacy by remembering him and practicing his teachings. This year, the Satya Sai Aradhana Mahotsavam, offering of love and adoration to Satya Sai, will be observed for 40 days from 22nd of March to 30th of April 2017. This 40-day intense spiritual practice includes the celebration of World Human Values Day on 24th of April. Devotees are requested to engage in the following activities, namely chanting daily Om Shri Sai Ram at least 108 times, undertaking any service activity including small daily acts of love and kindness in thought, word or deed, reading and contemplating and putting into practice one quote from Swami every day from the compiled list of 40 quotes attached. And over the course of, I'm just getting away from the letter, dear listeners, over the course of the weeks leading to the Aradhana Day, I will share many of those quotes with you on Morning Glory. I'll continue with what Dr. Reddy has written. May we all become exemplars of his divine teachings and live in unity with love. Jai Sai Ram, lovingly in service of Sai, Dr. Narendranath Reddy, unquote. And now, brothers and sisters, I will bring you the telephone interview that we recorded with him. This will be followed by a surprise, which is a brand new self-reflection by Mr. K. Chakravarti, in which he comments on his great expectations of an ideal teacher. And finally, at the end of the show, I will bring you part two of Learning with Love with Mr. Bhanuji Rao. He's in conversation with my colleague, Mr. Bishop Rushdie. So let's get on with the telephone conversation that we just recorded this past Tuesday over the phone with Dr. Narendranath Reddy regarding the Aradhana Day Sadhana proposed by the Satya Sai International Organization. Have a listen, please. So, Sai Ram, Dr. Reddy, and welcome to Radio Sai.
Sai Ram Karuna, and thank you for this chance to share Swami's words and his love.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you, sir. Sir, we understand from the recent media releases by the SSIO that you are proposing a global 40-day sadhana, a rather intense sadhana, from March 22nd to April 30th. So why and what is the theme of this year's sadhana leading to the Aradhana Day?
So the main purpose is to constantly, that is, every moment, living the divine presence of our Lord Bhagavan Sri Satya Sai Baba and experience his unconditional and pristine love and share with everyone. That is the main purpose why we are doing that. And we want to intensify that is our common, always spiritual practice, but during these 40 days, we want to intensify this sadhana through this thing of namasmarana, and then doing selfless service, and then self-inquiry, and reading Swami's words.
And writing 108 times at least, or chanting daily 108 times Om Shri Sai Ram.
Yeah, either we can do the Likhita Japa, or people can say it loud, or you can do even Manasika Japa, only that person knows. Swami says, when you chant in the mind, it is very powerful, even more powerful than the writing is good, and saying it loud is good, but constant mental repetition of the name is even more powerful.
Mm-hmm. Sir, who is eligible to participate in this sadhana?
So, it is Swami's message is universal and eternal, so it is open for any seeker of truth and divinity. That is, it is open to both men and women of all ages and all nationalities, faiths, religions, and ethnicity and races. So it is essentially open for any sincere spiritual seeker.
That's so nice to hear. It's very all-inclusive, like everything else connected with Baba. Now, what outcomes are you looking to achieve from this exercise of 40 days?
So the thing is, so Swami says the main purpose, he started his mission, and the purpose of the organization is to make us realize our innate divinity and make our fellow brothers and sisters realize their innate divinity. So in this process, see how much we can move forward. Unless we intensify our efforts, we cannot know how much we are moving forward. So the whole purpose is to intensify our efforts to see how much you are progressing towards the goal of realizing our innate divinity. So that is the main thing we are looking for, that, and that each one has to know by themselves how much they have progressed.
So, in your considered opinion, why do you think this continuous spiritual audit is necessary from time to time?
Because spiritual life is like walking on a razor's edge, as Kathopanishad says, Churashadhara. So, unless we have constant vigilance, there is less, there will be a fall. Even I remember one time I was going with Swami someplace, and I said, Swami, I don't want to be deluded by your world bewitching Maya. And Swami said, do you think you're greater than Vasishta, Vishwamitra, and Jamadagni? Swami says, always you need to be very careful, constant vigilance and constant practice and internal audit, because these inner enemies we need to be always vigilant about, and take over, like the desire, anger, greed, attachment, pride, and jealousy. And we need to do our efforts first to identify our own faults. The problem is most of us focus is outside, finding faults in others, because we need to go inward and find our faults, correct them, and that is the only way to reach purity and enlightenment. So that is why this constant audit is necessary. And Swami said 3/4 of spiritual practices is self-inquiry. So that is why this is emphasized very much. Because another example, Swami says, like you have a silver vessel, if you periodically don't polish it, it will get tarnished. So you need periodic polishing. Similarly, in our spiritual life, sometimes we could become tarnished and we may not put in as much effort as we should. So, and then we couldn't start progressing forward, we may be going backward. That's why this constant vigilance and self-audit is very important.
You remind me of a quote from Zig Ziglar, one of the motivational speakers from America, who says that somebody asked him, why do I need inspiration every day? He said, for the same reason you need a shower every day. So we all need constant renewal all the time to go back and check how we are doing. Are we maintaining? Are we conserving and preserving and then moving forward? Very nicely said. Dr. Reddy, I noticed that you have asked in your... a letter to the international organization, you've asked members to also read and contemplate and try to practice at least one quote of Swami every day from a list of 40 quotations that I have with me here. Now, how did you go about picking those 40 quotations? On what basis?
Yeah, because Swami's every word is a mantra, you know, just any contemplating of one of his words is enough, and if you practice them intensely. But so this, we identified the quotes because of the various aspects of Swami's teachings. Some of the quotes are mainly focused on divine love, how to live in love and to how to practice love. And some of the teachings is focused on service, mainly how to do the selfless service, how it will get rid of our ego and take us beyond. And some quotes are focused mainly on Advaitic philosophy, to realize that we are the Atman, we are divinity. So that is, so mainly we try to cover the three basic aspects of bhakti, jnana and karma. So that is why this encompasses all these various aspects of the spiritual practices what Swami has touched. And also there are some other quotes were chosen where to see how much we have progressed, like some quote where she says, proof of rain is wetness of the ground, and Swami says, really, if you really progress in spirituality, the two parameters are purity and peace of mind. So, prashanti, that is what he calls. Like the different aspects are taken from Swami's divine teachings and put them together, emphasizing these aspects.
Well, that's very nice to know, and that you have recognized that one size doesn't fit all. So an aspirant can pick something that really speaks to him or her and then work with that. Dr. Reddy, is the Aradhana Day a difficult day for you personally?
It was in the beginning. So now I feel Swami is with me all the time. So like in because when in 2011 Swami left his physical form, because we used to have a lot of interactions and blessings and guidance from Swami at the physical level. So it was a big void for a while. But soon after, by his grace and blessings, we came over that. And by his grace, we feel his presence wherever we are. And during my travels all over the world, I feel he's with me and guiding me, guarding me. So really, I look forward to this day, to how much I can express gratitude to him and count my blessings he has given, reminisce and relive the moments I had with Swami. So just it makes me think about him more.
Well, on that very grateful note, Dr. Reddy, I want to thank you for your time and for connecting with us.
Yes, thank you.
And we look forward to having a more intense and engaging interaction with you in a few weeks from now, just before the Aradhana Day. Thank you, Dr. Reddy and okay. Sairam.
Sairam.
Sairam, dear listeners, you just heard Dr. Narendranath Reddy, the chairman of the Prashanti Council, share some highlights of the efforts by the Global Sai family to mark the Aradhana Day with greater love and reverence. Soon we will bring you a similar message from the All India President of the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization of India, Mr. Nimish Pandya, about the sadhana efforts leading to the Aradhana Day within Bharat. And now I have a question for our listeners this morning. Very shortly, I'm going to play for you Mr. K. Chakravarti's reflection number 10 on great expectations of an ideal teacher. And I want you to first listen very carefully and then think of a name, if any pops up, of your favorite teacher in life. Based on what you've heard and your own inspiration, and maximum if you can nominate two names per person, please mention the full name as per your memory, the best you can remember, of the best teachers who have touched your life ever, and the two noblest qualities of each teacher that really inspired you to nominate that person. So, this great teacher of yours, I want this teacher's name, the school or college where this teacher taught you, and the city and country. And email me your answers at my email ID, karuna@radiosai.org. K for kite, A-R-U-N-A, @radiosai.org. Only after you have listened to Mr. K. Chakravarti's reflection, because in my experience, this was one of the finest pieces of, ideas on what an ideal teacher should be like. And after I listened to it, it got me thinking. So I want you to put on your thinking caps also and give it some thought. And if a name pops up, give me all the details. Now, you take your time because I'm not going to announce your name this week. I want everyone to go down memory lane, whoever is connected with us right now, and please try and remember if there's a teacher in your life you'd like to honor. And if you send me your answers, you can also tell your teacher to tune into the Asia stream of Radio Sai next Thursday, and they can hear your tribute to them, the qualities for which you nominated your teacher. So next Thursday, I will read out all the names of the teachers and the listeners who have participated. And I will also read out the qualities that inspired you to nominate your teacher. This reflection by Mr. Chakravarti will be followed by part two of our ongoing interview, Learning with Love, with Mr. Bhanuji Rao. He's in conversation with my colleague, Bishu. So please enjoy the rest of the show, and I wish you a saisam awesome day ahead. Till we meet next Thursday, Jai Sai Ram and happy listening. Please don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to Asia Stream on Radio Sai, your connection to the spiritual capital of the universe. Sai Ram.
Great expectations from a teacher. Not having been a teacher, I cannot tell you what you should be doing as teachers. However, as I continue to be a student, even after entering the administrative service, I can at best tell you what I, as a student, would expect of my teacher. By continuing to be a student, I have escaped the plaintive cry of the poet, "Breathes there a man with soul so dead?" To begin with, I would expect of my teacher to have great scholarship, a scholarship that's so forbidding that my respect towards him is spontaneous. He would have wide reading and deep understanding. He would be an engaging conversationalist who would take me through the complexities of the subject with effortless ease. He would render the most difficult concept so deceptively simple. He would choose his words with great care so as to convey the full import of his communications. He would be a great storehouse of information, a great repository of knowledge, and a symbol of wisdom in such a way that he defies the poet T.S. Eliot when he complains, "Where is the wisdom lost in knowledge? Where is the knowledge lost in information?" I would expect him to be incisive in his analytical rigor. He would be quick to see through the inconsistencies in my logic and with their deft touches bring order to my edifice. At the same time, he would demolish my thesis with certain intellectual ruthlessness, but without any damage to my self-confidence. He would lay there before me the vastness of the subject and the successive steps through which I should be able to see my way. He would allow me to learn on my own, and that would be there to lean on. He will not minimize the difficulty, but encourage me to traverse the ground on my own with the assurance of his guidance. He would enable me to see different fascinating facets of the problem and allow me to choose the one in which I'll find my métier. He'd be so demanding that sometimes I could feel he is heartless. He would expect of me to put in superhuman effort, leading me to feel whether it is at all worthwhile to continue with him. He'd be such a mind reader that would immediately ease the pressure and restore in me the zest for learning. He would drive me to the farthest limits of my ability, only to make me realize that I am capable of doing far more than what I thought I could. He would be strict but not harsh, gentle but firm. He would teach me how time is precious by engaging himself in a variety of assignments and moving from one to another with ease and dexterity. He would be extraordinarily hard-working and still has no hint of strain. He would have time for everyone and give the impression that time is so elastic. He would give himself so utterly to others that one is left to wonder whether there is any time for himself. He would take me through the maze of arguments and counter-arguments with such thoroughness that I am left with the feeling that there is more to reality than what meets the eye. He would tear apart and then put together. He would make me bisect and dissect and then ask me to put them together. He would expect me to assemble, disassemble and reassemble. He would help me see a pattern in the apparently vast assemblage of inchoate data. He would provide me, the wayfarer, guidepost in the long journey towards self-discovery and self-fulfillment. His immense knowledge and capacity for self-renewal would give freshness to old ideas that every day is a new dawn and every student a guided self-learner. Not just these talents and skills. My teacher would have a keen sense of what is right and wrong. He has a passion for getting right things done in the right way. His personal life is seen as being founded on virtue and has a quiet sense of public morality which makes him a true representative of the human race. I would expect him to show a strong insistence on the unity of the universe and man's duty as part of a great choice for all his doing. I would expect him to be other-centric and not self-centric. I would expect him to teach that we are all members of a worldwide brotherhood and that all of us live our lives as fellow workers with God. I would expect my teacher to open vistas of inquiry beyond the subjects I study and research. I would expect him to make me understand that there are many things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in my philosophy. I would expect him to let me know the futility of counting the grains of sand on the seashore, but set sail on my own journey, crossing the seas through gentle breeze and stormy weather, through the rhythmic waves and great tides. I would expect him to tell me that all great tasks have humble beginnings, and if the world cannot be reformed, I can reform myself so that I see the world through my reformed eyes. He will tell me that there are times for action and time for reflection, so that I do not show Hamlet-like inaction and Othello-like lack of reflection. I expect him to teach me that there are great discontinuities in human progress and evolution, and that there is a great continuity so that I understand that while all else changes externally, human nature remains more or less the same. And the quest for the good, the noble, the lofty, and the sublime will always be there for me as for everyone else. My teacher will help me see so much beauty and so much goodness, leaving me to wonder how much beauty and goodness must be with the architect behind this creation. That the world is not built by random bricks of chance. The great design is behind it. And the more I see the randomness, the greater the clarity of the design. I expect my teacher to let me know the secret of his childlike wonder at seeing this creation, despite his weighty scholarship. That behind his sage-like visage, there are gleaming eyes eager to capture eternity through the vanishing brilliance of the moment. I expect my teacher to teach me as much through his silence as through his eloquence. I would expect of my teacher to have a sense of humor, the ability to laugh at himself and at the world. He would be a man of wit who sees the sublimity and the absurdity of the world. Need I say that I expect him, by human measure, the nearest to God? Sai Ram.
There is not an iota of a place where he is not.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to use the standard terminology of omnipresence, because everybody uses omnipresence these days. But that's what I mean by omnipresence. Omnipresence includes being present in everybody.
Yes.
I'll give you two or three examples. Tons of them I have, but I give two or three examples how he demonstrated his omnipresence. My family and myself, we came from Washington to Bombay. The main idea was that we should all come to Whitefield, first have a darshan, then go home to our native place. We go to Visakhapatnam, Vijayanagaram. But the baggage was so much.
Mm-hmm.
2 pieces per person. You don't ever give up anything that is freely given. So plenty of bags. 3 children, my wife and myself. And the decision was taken within the family circle that we are not going to Bangalore, we are not going to Whitefield, we are first going home, dump all this, then we will think about going to Whitefield. I was feeling inwardly that Swami wants to see us. He's waiting for me. This is ridiculous, but that was my thinking. He's waiting for me. My wife, we were all in a hotel in Bombay. My wife was asleep. Children were sleeping. I couldn't sleep. Intermittently, my eyes get wet because he's waiting for me and I'm not going.
Oh.
If somebody asks me, what is the proof that he is waiting there? I don't know. I don't have any proof. At 4 or 4.30, I was still not sleeping. At 4 or 4.30, as I was having tears rolling down, huge, it's like somebody saying in a microphone, you go.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I heard. You go. From somewhere, I got all the strength. I told my wife, I will arrange somebody to escort you. Somebody will escort you. You all proceed to Visakhapatnam. But I am going to Whitefield. All the dynamism of how do I tell her, how can I leave her, how can I leave them, that was all there until that moment. But at that moment, when I heard this, you go, it was not, you know, like a whisper. No. It's amazing loudness. It was clear to me. And that it was so loud, I think it has transferred into me tremendous amount of courage to take law into my hands and tell my family, I'm giving you an escort. He will escort you. Don't worry about anything. you just go. They all happily left, and I came to Whitefield. Swami never, my God, my ego will be bloated if he said, I am waiting for you. Naturally, I will become another great man. No, normal darshan, but he did talk to me, he did call me, he did spend time with me.
Wow.
And it was again a connectivity. Now, but this also shows that every particle, he is there. All are his resources. He can use them if he wants to. From where did that sound come? Ether? Sound waves? Physics? I don't know. But did you imagine? Then why should I imagine you go? I can imagine, kindly go. It was like a command. You go. It was a command, nothing short of a command. So a command cannot be from you. You don't command yourself. It was an amazing experience to me to hear that. And a second example of his omnipresence. I have a friend who is a very ardent devotee of Swami. We were classmates in 1959. We both met in Whitefield during a summer course. After a gap about close to 30 years, 33 years or something. So we were chatting away. And starting 9 o'clock, the Sevadal people were coming and telling both of us, please sir, please sleep sir, stop talking sir. They were whispering to each other, but still they were doing their duty very well. So one final question I asked my friend. I said, what exactly do you do in Hyderabad? I'm a marketing chief for a government company which actually exports minerals abroad. I said, iron ore? Yes. Other minerals? Yes. Then, before saying good night, I told him, you should be ashamed. Digging Mother Earth, did you take her permission? Just dig deep and then sell it abroad? I am so sorry. Anyway, good night. Sai Ram. Over. Next day morning, 8:30 or 9, Swami was giving a discourse in the summer course. I never forget those words. And let me, at the cost of becoming unpopular, let me say it in Telugu first. Yemiti export, export, export antunaru. Bhumi dolchestunaru, pamminchestunaru. Adha export too. Swami said, what export, export, export? You are digging the mother earth, digging the earth, and then taking pieces and sending it abroad. Is that the export? Use your talent. Use your hands. This man comes running to me. Last night you finished me. Now he finished me. I said, no, look, 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 look. I never expected it. But I'm so happy because he confirmed that I am right.
Wow.
He confirmed that I am right.
He was only speaking again and again.
That was another monumental proof that he listens to everything.
Wow.
He is everywhere.
He is only reaction, reflection, resound.
Exactly. So that is the second one. And finally, one more thing I'll tell you. As I said, there are too many. But if you remember, there was a very major function in the indoor stadium. It was probably the inauguration of the indoor stadium or something like that. 2 years before that, every now and then I was praying to Swami. Swami, one day, without all these complex Sanskritized terminologies, one day, can you just simply say, I am in each one of you. Please say that, Swami. Because that is my understanding. But I want a confirmation. See, he is omnipresent, he is omnipotent. It's one way to put it. But to say that in all of you, in each one of you, I am there. Please, Swami. And you know, every 2 months, every 3 months, whenever I remember, whenever I see him, I always used to say, Swami, please say this, Swami. And of course, he never said that. That day in the indoor stadium, I don't know what all he was talking. Nothing went into my head. Suddenly he said, whether you know or not, whether you understand or not, I want to tell you something today. I am in each one of you. I was in tears. I said, thank you, Swami. Thank you. Because it's now a little more easy to feel you in everybody. A little easier. Because in that language I wanted to hear. You see, all these great Sanskritized massive statements, they don't get close to what you want to learn. So, Swami made it very... It's so simple. Meeku telisina, telikapoyina. Ardhamaina, ardhangakapoyina. Me andharlonu, nene unnanu. I was so happy. Not that I practice it 100%, but it's a great joy to me to keep remembering, to recollect every now and then. You know, it's so beautiful. When I see somebody, I feel like giving something. And while I was giving, thank you, Swami, for allowing me to give you. Because you have to empiricize it. You should not leave it as a theory.
Yes.
You should make it like an empirical practice. So I think these three are sort of examples, because the most difficult thing with reference to the link between devotee and the divine is every experience is a great experience. So selecting is more or less random. Similarly here, in terms of learning,
yes,
in terms of I learned his omnipresence again and again and again.
Wow. It is only a confirmation every time it was happening.
Yes.
Again.
Yes.
And the more confirmed you are, the more you want to experience it. And
yes,
the more experienced you are, the more confirmed you are.
Yes. Yes.
This goes
and
on.
The more you seek the experience, the more he gives.
More he gives.
He's ever giving.
Yes.
Ever giving. Ever giving. Because you put a stop, he may stop. I don't know. But as you rightly said, the more we have, the more we ask him. And the more he is ready to give.
Yes.
And every time it is like new.
Hmm.
The beautiful thing is, life with him is always new.
It's an exciting business. Life with him is exciting.
Very. Very. In fact, that is life.
That is what is life.
That is life.
Yes.
The rest is all jing bang. That is life. Love. I used to include in my prayer Vinayaka, Ganesha, and then Swami, and then Sri Lalita.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, I think about until about 79 or 84, until that time, what I used to do is, I used to light the camphor for Swami, Mangalam Gurudevaya, Mangalam Gyanadayane. Tukhi, you know, short Mangalam.
Hmm.
And then I used to look at Lalita Mahatripura Sundari and say, Jaira Jaiharati Sri Parvati Lalitamba Nikide. One day, I broke down thinking, what is this? Can't I have one Mangalaharati something? Mangalam Gurudevaya. Jaiharati. And one day I will start giving another harti to Anjaneya, another harti to Vinayaka. What is this, Swami? That day, before the harti, I was only crying. Because the harti will come. And I have to do two hartis. I lit the camphor. I am not a poet. I am not a scholar. I am not a Sanskrit known fellow. I just lighted the harti. Parabrahma Swarupa, Parameswara, Jagad Rakshaka, Jagadishwara, Jagat Kalyanakaraka, Sirasakti Swarupa, Samasta Devata Swarupa, Sachidananda Murti, Mathrudaya Mandira Nivasa, Sri Sachisaisa, Mangalaharti Samarpayami. From that day, this was the harti that I gave. And
it just came naturally.
It just came. And I was only crying like a baby, saying Parabrahma Swarupa, and I didn't know until about 7 months or 8 months when I said this to a friend of mine in Washington. That friend said, do you know it was exactly nine names? I said, I don't know. And mind you, 30 years now, starting from mid-80s, this is the Mangala Harati I give. Parabrahma Swarupa, Parameswara, Jagat Rakshaka, Jagadishwara, Jagat Kalyanakaraka, Shivasakti Swarupa, Samasta Devata Swarupa, Sachidananda Murti, Mat Hrudaya Mandira Nivasa, Sri Satcha Saisa, Mangala Harati Samarpiyami.
Wow.
Karpura Nirajanan Samarpiyami. I was there. I just want to tell you, you were genuine doubt. Learn to put it across. But that doubt should not be, Swami, should I invest in this treasury bond or should I invest in the stock market bond? I don't know about that because that experience I don't have. In relation to God, in relation to the divine, in relation to Him, any question, genuine, of course, also mixed with a couple of tears, He will come down. I have, all the 50 years, I experienced only one thing. My Swami cannot see the two teardrops in your eyes. And they cannot come through the cinema type tears. He is nothing but pure motherly compassion. He can't see the child having a tear in his eyes. It is not that I'm asking everybody to somehow cry. No. But please understand, how can you not cry if you are longing for Him to solve a problem and He's not yet coming? Innumerable number of experiences where He just cannot see the teardrops. This is the best example because I have never ever composed anything like that. I have never thought about anything like that. And instantly, it was beautiful. Because after 10, 15 years, I started looking at the meanings of them. And I said, my God, what a fantastic gift you have given. Mat Hrudaya Mandira Nivasa.
Yes.
Sri Satcha Saisa.
The indweller of my heart.
What is, and you know, I never wanted to either publish it or publicize it because I don't know whether that is what he wants or not, but it is worth sharing that even such a monumental piece of gap, my Swami has come rushing to fill it up. So beautifully, he filled it up.
Amazing. In fact, I'm just tempted to say that if you drop a tear in love for Him, you can be rest assured that all your worries and anxieties and everything of your life is dropped. Everything that bothers you in your life is dropped at that moment because it has dropped onto His lap and now He takes care. As I listen to your life lessons, all of these lessons are not what you would find in any books on self-development, on any literature that you will read on how to become a successful person. Those books will tell you have self-confidence, you know, sharpen your skills, become brilliant in this particular trait of your personality. But all that you said is something which might seem very out of the world, might seem very illogical, might seem even to a normal person who does not believe so much in the divine, it might seem even unreasonable and impractical. And strangely, these are the lessons that come after you've gone through so much in life. And perhaps, as you said, one has to only experience. And only then this conviction can come. And I think, as Bhagwan says, first faith, then experience. So we have to take these as principles which work. Have that faith. And I think then we will see the results.
There is one caveat. Suppose I go and learn pottery. With a little bit of innovation, I can probably make some pots which are more durable than the normal pots. But that they end with the pot. But suppose Swami told me to make pots. As soon as I finish it, I am waiting for the second. There is a continuum with the divine principle. There is no continuum with all other books. The divine story, the divine instructions, the life with the divine is a full life. If a salesman, a sales executive is trained at a management institute and he goes once in a way for refresher trainings, he is nothing but sales and sales and sales. From sales, no divinity. But if Swami told me to be a salesman, that's a means to an end.
Yes.
And it's a continuum. All I am saying is, the world should know, and the world here is world of devotees, the world of starting devotees, the world of middle devotees, the world of long-standing devotees. All these people, they know that there is a book which they follow, namely their relationship with Swami. And that book is not available for the normal people, for the out of the devotee circle people. However, just as Satyam Sivam Sundaram part 1 brought me to Swami, or Swami used the Satyam Sivam Sundaram part 1 to pull me to Him, we should pray,
yes,
that more and more people are brought into your fold, Swami, so that the world community becomes even closer and more peaceful.
Yes. More peaceful, more happier.
Yes.
Talking about the world being a happier place, there are many things that Bhagwan has said which concern the world we live in. Not necessarily quote-unquote spiritual subjects, but according to Swami, there is nothing that is out of the bounds of spirituality, and that is the reason why we had Bhagwan who came to the management classes, who came every Sunday and spoke to the management students. We had Bhagwan who came to the on Thursdays to the college and spoke to all the students, and he spoke about everything. From marketing to finance to production to chemistry to physics to Vedanta. And I remember there are so many occasions where Bhagwan specially came to address the MBA students after the start of the... It was then called the School of Business Management, Accounting and Finance in 1986. And today when you read those discourses, which are very beautifully compiled in the book Man Management, each thing that Bhagwan has said, perhaps at that point in time, in the 80s, when Bhagwan said all these things, you never really paid so much attention to them. Perhaps, you know, perhaps it didn't make that much meaning to you. And perhaps these are, I feel like, shlokas in Bhagavad Gita. You go on reading and you keep getting new meanings out of it. So one thing I want to ask you and request you to share your views on this, is this concept of modernization, the concept of what is progress. You know, if you see in the world outside today, the country wants that people spend. They want to empower every person, increase the purchasing power of every person so that more people spend, and the more the people spend, that is what is good for the economy. So if you see in the larger scheme of things, everything is driving towards making people go out and spend. And if you see what Bhagwan always mentioned, right from the time of 50th birthday, 60th birthday in the 80s, Swami always said that one must have COD, ceiling on desires. COD to GOD. Ceiling on desires is what will take you to God. And sometime back, I remember Professor Anil Kumar was having a conversation with Bhagwan, and he was saying, Swami, modern life is filled with so many gadgets, and you cannot just not be without them, and your life is filled with so many conveniences thanks to the way technology has developed and all that. And Swami, is this not modernization? Is this not what is modernity? And then Bhagwan says, no, modernity is not exploitation. Modernity is not consumption. Modernity is limitation. And Bhagwan goes on to say, modernity is making use of natural resources in a limited way without disfiguring them or without killing them altogether. And then he goes on to add, modern life, or what you call modernity, is not the latest style of living. Modernity lies in putting a ceiling on our desires. Control of one's own desires is modernity, and not leading a life of limitless desires. But you have the market and the nation and the society telling, no, the continuous progress, everybody needs to spend. So where do you draw the line, and how do you understand these two apparently paradoxical concepts?
Well, actually, I see, as people say, forewarned is forewarned. I can see very easily what Swami really predicted. He said, real modernity is ceiling on desires. Actual modernity is going to the street for consumption. What exactly is the reality today? The reality today is tremendous inequalities,
yes,
which are behind crime of every conceivable variety. There is no gene which is saying crime is integral to the human being. I'm sorry, the gene is not a criminal gene. I don't believe in that. I don't believe that a human being is made, preordained to be a criminal. No. But what do you expect me to do if 55 people are playing with a smartphone? I am the only fellow without a smartphone.
Hook or crook, I want a smartphone.
I want a smartphone. And I want to be smart enough not to spend for a smartphone, but get one.
Somehow.
Somehow. Now, I think when Swami said ceiling and desires, I hope Swami will forgive me. I don't think he meant one meal a day, sleeping on the mat. No, no, no. His idea is very simple. If everybody has some restraint in terms of consumption, there will be enough in the world to meet everybody's need.
Wow.
There will be no inequalities. Swami never ever talked about inequalities, to the best of my knowledge. He never gave a discourse on income inequality. He never gave a discourse on wealth inequality. But as part of his agenda for Banerjee Rao to write, for 30 years I have been only writing on inequality.
Wow.
And amazing as it may sound, there are 30 books, 30, which have come out between 2010 and 2016 on inequality in the United States.
Wow.
And 3 or 4 of them are by Nobel laureates in economics. Swami has forewarned. If there is nothing to fight, where is the fighting? A lot of things. I think even in the classes I must have said, Swami, sweetly used to say, my life is my message. But you must see what are those messages in his life. A very great example, one of the most astounding examples, is every individual, even if the person is an eminent scientist, or the person is just an ordinary Sevadal man who has grown up to become the Sachisai organization president in his state or in his city, they all come here, one room, bathroom, kitchen. I'm sorry. What else can I prove about Swami's passion for equality? Visibility of equality, not the bank account.
Yes.
If there is visibility of equality, and you have a tremendous amount of money in the bank, you will actually help people ad nauseam, ad infinitum. Because what do you do with all that cash? You also have only one room and a kitchen and a bathroom. I just mentioned to you about the 30 books on inequality. None of them talk about removing visible inequalities. They are all discourses of eminent scientists on engrossing subject called inequality. I am sorry that they can't solve the problem of inequality, because the ceiling on desires is a self-discipline.
Yes.
It is a beautiful terminology for all these Sai Sevadal people and Sai devotees to understand. But what does it signify? It signifies, as many of us do, you get a new pant, you give the old pant to somebody. It's the practice of a constraint on consumption. Not starving.
Yes.
Not struggling.
Swami did not say no desires.
No. He used to give wonderful clothes to everybody.
Yes.
No.
And I think instead of you buying 10 shirts, you buy 2 shirts and let another 4 people also buy 2 shirts each. That way there is greater consumption. And that is good for the society.
And also one thing. In Swami's economics, if you are only restricting yourself to 2 shirts, there is a tremendous amount of supply. More supply, less demand, price has to fall. Instead, what we are doing is, we are artificially increasing the price by massive consumption by one person, and the other fellow can't consume because the price is too high.
Too high.
Don't underestimate the social benefit that Swami's economic wisdom wants to bring. And the standard example, I'm so sorry, my apologies to say what I'm going to say in a few seconds. So many policy makers have visited Prasanthi Nilayam. So many. Can't they say, there is no house tax, there is no property tax, there is no registration fees if it is a 2-bedroom apartment or a 1-bedroom apartment? Why not? Where is the incentivization for reducing consumption? No. We are actually incentivizing increasing consumption. You go to any city now in India, there are cars piling up, there is no place to drive. That is not ceiling on desires. What we need is excellent public transport and not private automobiles. But the point is, these are to be internalized. I don't think we should dictate all this to somebody. We should not force people to put a ceiling on desires.
Yes.
No, that's not what Swami
that's
wants.
That's not what Swami wants.
What Swami would like to see, probably, is people actually put a constraint with a tremendous amount of joy.
Joy.
Now, I want to go back to what I have been all the time telling. Why do you need to put a ceiling on desires to get close to Swami?
Yes.
there is a higher purpose. The sad part of it is, for those who have the higher purpose, for those who understand the higher purpose, what is that higher purpose? Get close to Swami. I'm sorry, there is nothing higher than that according to me. To get close to Swami, here I want to clarify. Swami can be Jesus, can be Allah, can be Rama, can be Krishna. For God's sake, don't limit Swami to only one name. All names are His. All forms are His. That doesn't mean there is something superior and inferior. No. Bhagavan Himself sang Ganesh songs. Bhagavan Himself sang Krishna songs. So don't put plus and minus. Any chosen name, any chosen God, if that God and that name are dear to you, then the result will be seeing that name and form in all creation, and therefore trying to see that everybody has something and not just one person has everything. The root cause of inequality is there is no higher purpose.
Yes.
I would like to submit here this devotion which gives the higher purpose, this proximity to the divine, Krishna, Rama, Jesus, etc., which gives the higher purpose, it cannot be taught, it can only be experienced. However, we can pray and we can hope that in every religious place, the higher purpose will be broadcast. The higher purpose will be publicized. Not as moksha, not as reaching the swarga, but getting close to the divine in this body, in this very life. Seeing Krishna in this life. Loving Krishna in this life. Enjoying the love of Krishna in this life. Seeing Jesus in this life. Enjoying the love of Jesus in this life. That is the higher purpose. If that higher purpose is routinely, daily publicized in every spiritual, religious establishment, there is a hope that people may one day give up all inequalities, give up all extra consumption, because there is something higher to look for. And that is the central core message of Swami's sealing and desires. It is not putting a little slip of paper and telling how much sealing I have done today, how much rice I have cut today. No, not that. That is a good thing. That's a good thing. It's healthy. We tend not to overeat. It's very good. But the higher purpose, namely getting close to divine, enjoyment, what a joy it is. No cigarette can give, no alcohol can give, nothing can give that joy. The joy of holding on to the lotus feet of my Lord. That joy can only come if the knowledge about the joy is publicized. It has to be publicized by every religious establishment. And so many times Swami implicitly said that this is what they have to do.
Amazing. I think that is the reason why Bhagavan also said that there is no one in this world who is an atheist.
Absolutely.
Swami said,
absolutely.
Even when you say God is nowhere, you say God is
now here.
God is now here. Swami says, first you say God is. That is what it is. First God is. Then you say nowhere, but first God is. And Bhagavan said, is there anyone in this world who does not believe in love? Is there anyone in this world who says truth is not what is needed? Is there anyone in this world who says honesty is not a good thing? See, and what is God? So there is no one in this world who is actually an atheist. Why I thought about this is, as you were speaking, I was thinking this is okay to say someone who believes in God, that you know, our whole purpose in life is actually to have that higher goal. But if someone does not believe in God at all, then how are you going to tell him.
No, but the reason why people don't believe in God is because what is done in the name of God. If inequality is reduced,
yes.
If the world is a peaceful community,
yes.
There is no atheist. Because they love that.
Yes.
What is laval serval?
Absolutely.
You see, there is no inequality in the kingdom of God. Inequality is a constraint which is orchestrated by people, by desires, by accumulation. You don't need that. I'm again telling you, you are most welcome to have $1 billion in your bank. Yes. I have no problem. But you live next to me.
Yes.
You have 3 rooms, I have 2.
Yeah.
What a beautiful life it is.
Yes.
Now, there is no doubt in my mind that an excellent part of this statement, my life is my message, is the white we all wear.
Yes.
We don't know how much you have in your bank. I have in
but
my bank.
But no one knows who.
No one knows.
Oh, yeah.
Qualifications, don't know. Bank account, don't know. And one room, bathroom, kitchen. What, without saying what Swami was implying through these examples is, try elsewhere also.
Yes.
Try elsewhere also. Why is it, what do you do with your extra bank account if you have the 3-bedroom apartment and 2 trousers and 1 suit, etc., etc.? You naturally want to give away.
Yes.
But the giving away is also not because you love to become somebody. No, you want to get close to
yes.
world peace.
Yes.
Close to community feeling.
Yes.
Close to minimum inequalities. An atheist is good enough.
Yes. Amazing. And I think this is the best way perhaps to put it to the younger generation, that if you want world peace, this is the surest way for world peace. Technology cannot give us world peace.
Absolutely.
All our new methods of strategies of trying to increase consumption, trying to... All this is not going to give us world peace.
The people should not misunderstand that there's something intrinsically bad in consumption. No.
Yes.
But there's another part of the statement which you have mentioned earlier. Consistently, consciously minimize the exploitation of natural resources. Now, I would say in my English, try to take the approval of Mother Earth before you dig. There is the height of omnipresence of the divine is, how dare I hit the earth? How dare I pull out a plant? If one gets into that fold, our environment will be automatically taken care of. Because it is not that global climate change is some sudden upheaval that has happened. It is people and their consumption which has created all that. So when Swami was mentioning about COD, it has multiple dimensions, implications. And whether it is natural resource use or environment. In fact, I always used to feel, every time I contemplated about Swami's tremendous love for Mother Earth, I used to, this is an extrapolation because this he didn't tell me, my mental imagination. I used to wonder why he doesn't wear chappals when he gives darshan. Ordinaries in the olden days, when we were coming in the 70s, for example, it was sand.
Yes.
And Swami used to walk on that sand. I used to interpret it as, his mother loves him so much, Mother Earth. How can he use slippers? The poor woman will feel bad about it. She is holding him. Now, if you take such a view, then everyone will be very careful before they dig deep into the Mother Earth. In fact, I always remember a statement of Mahatma Gandhi. Very, very beautiful statement.
Yes.
There is enough in the world for everybody's need.
Yes.
But alas, it is nothing compared to everybody's greed.
Yes.
And I would put an incentive mechanism for sealing on desires. The incentive is to get close to Swami. That's the...
Yes. And I mean, why do you have desires for happiness? And that will give you the best happiness.
Exactly. There is no other happiness other than being very happy in Swami's view.
Yes.
And to see Him happy with what we are doing.
Yes.
You know, every one of us, you can recall, every one of us wanted to hear happy.
Hmm.
If He looked at us and said, I am happy for what you have done, oh my God, that gives us a great view. But coming back to the atheist, he will be supremely happy because there is no misery through inequality.
Yes. Love for God, as Bhagwan very beautifully said, will lead to fear of sin and morality in society. And I think once there is morality in society, earlier you also referred to inflation. And I remember in one discourse, Bhagwan said, inflation is because of deflation in human values. Bhagwan said, on one occasion, the low value of the Indian rupee in the foreign exchange market can be attributed to weak mind of people who lack self-determination. He said, if something happens in the political theater of the country, people just panic, and that panic just leads to
outflow.
Stock exchange, waywardness, and then that leads to adverse effect on investments, and then the devaluation of the rupee. And Swami says the rupee is influenced by wild imagination of people on the street. Rupee value has declined because of decline in human values. What are your thoughts?
Well, in one interview where there was a very, very important people holding important positions in government, and Swami was referring to the devaluation of the rupee. And then he said, simple thing, if only the rupee is respected and if people focused on exporting, using their hands, their talent, their intellect, and obviously the so-called trade surplus would mean balance of payment surplus, which would mean stronger rupee. He didn't say so much, but it's all implied. Now, when there are such senior bureaucrats, obviously Swami didn't probably want to talk about human values. But the implication is very clear. What is the net impact of values on consumption? I think it's again a discipline not to consume, A. B, a little bit of India-centric consumption, less of import-centric consumption. It's the greatest value. Rupee has to appreciate.
Tune in to Sight.
Spend the day with Sight. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sight Thursday Live.
Radio Sight.